welcome to another edition of Shattering Myths. Craig Yada wanted to spend some time with his grandchild today. And so Scott asked me if I'd like to sit in for an hour, and he sold me. I'm here. How are you doing this morning, Scott?
I'm doing good. Things were a little rushed. I received a text at about 6 o'clock this morning telling me that his daughter-in-law was going into labor and that he was going to go be a grandpa for a while today. So we might get a call from him at some point here, but he's off being Grandpa Craig today.
Yeah, well, that's good. He can do that.
That's what I told him. I told him I'll figure it out. So thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. How's your Suka going?
Lonely. It's lonely.
Well, the club. We all eat our peas alone.
It's better than the alternative. So
you betcha. Yeah. You know, that's part of the instruction right there in matzah. You know, you go out and you take your piece of matzah and you eat it alone. You know, we all eat our piece alone. And that's pretty much the way it goes these days. You know, there's a pretty important part of Sukkah, and I'm not downplaying that anybody would, go out and camp out. I think it's great that if you can do that. But, you know, Yahweh doesn't really put a lot of burdens on us. And one of the things he points out in the Sukkah instructions is you got a first and you got an eighth day. That you set apart, and of course that ends the Moed Mikra for the year, because that really is the end of the process of the seven steps, and it's befitting that it happens in the seventh month. But there was a case a few years ago where a fella asked me if I was going to be camping out. And I said, well, no, I can't. I own a business. I really can't just run off for a week. And he said, so you're not going to obey Yahweh's commands this year, huh?
Oh, what? That doesn't mean.
Obey Yahweh's commands this year. Now, first of all, Yahweh doesn't command anything. And there's free will all throughout the Torah. Everything's free will. So when people create, when the scribes created the fearsome religious deity, they had to have him commanding, and then, of course, you had to be obeying. And since it was all part of a religious plot, you know, it was the clergy that stood in, and they commanded, and you obeyed. What a great plan, huh? There's a plan for salvation.
Well, I've noticed that most men, plans of men, are commanding. I'm controlling something, so I'll just follow what Yah said. So he's never.
Well, what go ahead, Scott.
He's never. He has some stipulations and things. If you want to be, I got to be circumcised. That's a huge one. But other than that, it's he's never really commanded you to do anything.
No, the door's wide open. You can walk out. You can stay in. Of course, you got a world, and the home's a pretty small place. But one of the things I wanted to point out in Korah, which means called out, it means a lot of things. But in this case, it'd be called out assemblies, really. And it's been misnamed Leviticus. I don't even know what that means, nor do I even care. But it says, right here in Korah 23:42-43, you shall live in shelters for 7 days. All, and that's Kol, and this is Ezra, which means native born Yisraelites. So I wasn't born in Israel. So I'm responding to the Moed Mikra by setting apart the first day of Sukkah, and I will again on the eighth day. But I won't be living in tents. And again, I'm not knocking somebody if they do have a tent up, especially with kids or whatever, and especially if it's in their home. I mean, there's things that, there are you're living there as a symbol. It says so. You know, and that's what Souk is about. But Souk is, you know, as far as timing, is about a lot more than even that. You know, we do a seventh day Shabbat, which, you know, is a day to reflect about being with Yah, spend some time in the Torah, gain understanding. And we do that in the seventh day. The reason we do that in the seventh day is because it's a foreshadowing of the 1,000-year Sukkah period, or Sukkah, right? I mean, it's that's what it's about. It's a foreshadowing. And it's got a lot to do with timing, because from the fall of Adam up until Yahweh returns in the year 2033, that, and that's a fulfillment of Kippurim, 5 days later, we see at the end of the presentation of Kippurim, or the fulfillment of Kippurim and Zechariah, they're all walking into Sukkah. So that'll be year, right at the end of 6,000 years, we'll be starting in 2033 from the fall of Adam. And we'll be walking right into Sukkah.
We do have William with us. You may know William, Larry.
King William, yes.
What's up, Larry? How you doing?
I'm doing good, William. How are you?
I'm well. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing well.
That's great. Congratulations to Yada. That's one of the greatest gifts you'll ever receive right there, buddy. So,
he was pretty excited. He's been in all the breaks. He's talked about it quite extensively. So he's pretty excited.
And he should be. I just wanted to say something to Scott. And I think there's a lot of people that may sometimes feel lonely on the when they attend the Chag. And I just want you to know you're not alone. First of all, you have the greatest company ever, and that's Yah. So, you know, and he's all you'll ever need. And so, you're definitely not alone, my friend. And plus, you have family everywhere, you know, celebrating. I mean, there's not many of us, but we're celebrating with you, man.
Oh, definitely. And when I said is lonely, it was more of the normal people I have in my life around me aren't participating right with me, and which is fine. That's their choice. And I tell Craig all the time when we're talking that I'm super happy that to be alive at this point in time, because I have the internet. And, the Unpopular Truth Group and things like that, I could only imagine how, if I didn't, you know, see everybody else that's celebrating Sukkah, see Amy's family wishing us a happy Sukkah and things like that, that was fantastic. You know, things like that are fantastic, and those make it highly enjoyable, and it's like, and I've never had a problem with just being by myself. And like you said, I'm not alone. I have the creator of everything around me. So it's good. So I'm not upset by it, and I'm not saddened by it. It is what it is, and I'm happy with the choices I made.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah, the internet's a double-edged sword for me, but, sometimes I ponder, I think about that often, and I'm like, well, you know, being alive today versus then, I think they had less distractions back then. But we can get a wealth of information off of the internet, so I'd have to agree with you there. There's no excuse, right?
There is no excuse. So anything you want to learn about, you can learn about, and anything you want to study and things like that, it's all out there.
Absolutely.
So, the Yada Yada books, the forums and things like that. All those, 20 years ago, wouldn't have even been, nobody would have had those.
That steps right in line with, all the knowledge that's going to be unleashed right there at the end. You know, so people can make choices. I mean, they did a good job of covering up the truth for many, many, many years. I mean, people knew something was out of kilter. Certainly the people that came to understand what the Yobel's about and what the Mikray is about, how there's foreshadowings, how there's fulfillments of these things, and how they all fit perfectly together, which, you know, couldn't be some kind of a coincidence. You know, I mean, it's just a very, once you see that it all flows and it's all correct and there's no religion involved,
right,
it begins to make sense. I mean, once you understand Yahweh is not a religious deity, you know, as a Christian, I used to wonder, how is it Yahweh tears all these clerics to pieces? I mean, he's relentless against the clerics. And then suddenly, here's a religion. How is this possible? I mean, that alone is a little baffling, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, just recently, there were people all over the world saying, oh, yeah, Doomsday, September 23rd, 24th, 25th, around that time. I mean, we're still here. We're still here. So, once again, Yah destroyed those guys. Didn't even have to try, you know, because these guys are false prophets.
So we didn't even have to consider those days.
Yeah, right. We didn't because the timeline's been, you know, it's delineated. And so if you study, you do the research, you question, then you'll know. And most people don't. And that's the sad and unfortunate reality. And so, you know, they were all spoofed. You know, and so.
Well, I've survived a lot of false apocalypses now. The one the other day, there was Y2K that was supposed to be something horrible. You know.
Get the Mayan calendar.
Oh, the Mayan calendar, yeah.
Oreo cookie, you know.
Yeah. It ends. They don't have anything else. So, okay, whatever. So.
Don't worry, some guy will dream something up.
Yeah, yeah, of course, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, I do find it interesting that that, you know, the next time this event will occur, as far as the moon and all that, happened in 2033, which is pretty cool.
Definitely, we'll be right back.
This is Larry, and I'm back with Scott and William, better known as the Elevator Man, and we're going over. We're going over Sukkah and what it's really about. You know, I mean, every time that we practice, that we observe Shabbat, the seventh day of rest, that's a giant sign. That's a finger pointing at the seventh day of rest. There are 6,000 years in order to get to the fulfillment of the seventh. To camp out with Yahweh, which is what Sukkah really means. You're going to be sheltered. You're going to be in Eden-like conditions. And we were talking here about some of the frauds that have been perpetrated, whether it's like Y2K or whether it's the Mayan calendar. And most recently, what was this one tied into? I didn't even pay it a lot of attention. I thought it was pretty funny.
The whole four moons thing or whatever.
The four blood moons, the fraud.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If there, you know, Yada did a pretty extensive show on the four blood moons, where he pointed out that most of these blood moons, which were supposed to be a sign, aren't even visible. In fact, three of the four were centered over the Amazon, I believe. They wouldn't have been visible in the land in Jerusalem. And the last one would have been barely visible in the land. Boy, some warning for the people, you know, it's not visible. And secondly, all these occurrences of these blood moons took place after the event, you know, 70 years later, 100 years later. I mean, that was just a intellectual fraud that was perpetrated in order for a guy to sell a lot of books. That's all it was. But yeah, when we get into actual fulfillments, the Yobel is very important. You know, when Yahusha walked into the temple and started teaching, he went right to Yashaya and started reading about the Yovel. And a Yovel is a 50-year period of time. There are seven sevens plus one redemptive year of the Lamb. And what would they would do at that time is they would have a ram's horn, and it would go from tribe to tribe to tribe to tribe to tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go to Korah, where we're talking, you know, Korah is really the heart of the Torah, where the Mishpat or the Moed Mikra are explained, you know. It says, and you should count on your behalf seven Sabbaths of years. Seven sevens of years is a foundational pattern of conduct and as a means to guide your steps and base your understanding. And this shall be for you time periods of seven Sabbaths of years, seven sevens of years. And, of course, on that Yovel, then you've got one additional year, which is, you know, that's a complete Yovel. It's 50 years. Now, if you, in Torah, 40 is completion. 10 is completion, but it's rounded off by four tens, which is 40 as an example. It took 40 days and nights to write the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the flood, there were 40 days of rain. The children of Yisrael were lost for 40 years in the wilderness.
Okay.
And so then I'll go to the next passage, which is Korah 20:25-9. It says, then you should extend in association with Passover. Now, this is an association with Passover, and we know who the Passover lamb was. A ram's horn, shofar, a trumpet, to announce an essential message which is pleasing and acceptable, shining beautifully and brilliantly, sounding a blast which signals a warning and shouts for joy, providing notice of a doorway to healing. And that's Passover. That's the tiny doorway that we enter.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
On the 20th day of the seventh month, on the day of reconciliations, you shall continue to extend and circulate a shofar's ram's horn all throughout your realm. So you got seven sevens, and then you go to this 1 year where you're passing around the ram's horn in association. Awesome. Welcome back, and we were just going over a Yovel, and a Yovel's very important. We were talking about the completion being 40. 40 is always completion in the Torah. But it's, so 40 Yovel is total completion. And, you know, we're going over this because some of the hucksters out there with their blood red moons or whatever they're calling them. And we just went through the seven sevens, which is 49 years. And then he says, and then you should announce an actual invitation. An actual invitation. This is a very serious invitation here to freedom in the land on behalf of every inhabitant.
Yeah.
It shall always be a Yovel. Wow. Excuse me, I missed the part before this. I'm gonna back right up. Remember, this ram's horn was in association with Passover. And it says, you shall continue to extend and circulate that shofar, ram's horn, all throughout the realm. Now, that's Korah 25:9. And you should, of your own volition, completely set apart the 50th year. And that's exactly what happens, that 50th year. And then you should announce an actual invitation where the land will be completely free. Well, you know, that 50th year is when all the lands go back to the original owner. And last I checked, the owner of the entire universe is the creator of that universe, a being who associates himself with light named Yahweh that created it all, that lives in a dimension above us. I don't know why that's so hard to understand. You know, you look at a piece of paper that's two-dimensional. We, on the other hand, are three-dimensional. And in order for us to exist, there has to be a dimension above us. You know? And I don't understand what's so tough about that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you should, of your own volition, actually return the totality of an individual's property and possessions to them. And also, you should always return a person to his extended family and people. So slavery would be done away with. Everybody's ownership is gone. And we're free. Because on that 50th year, that Yobel year, everything is returned back to the person who owned it. And in this case, or that individual who owned it, is Yahweh. So there's your Yobel. And when you want to try to understand the way the Yobels work, just in the same way that Yahusha went, when he went into the temple, going right to Yashiyah and explaining the Yobel and teaching out of the Yobel, is that you'll see from the fall of Adam and Chawa, 40 Yobel period of time until the covenant was actually established on Mount Moriah today. And then 40 Yobel later, to the year, that is when the sacrifice was made by the suffering servant, Yahusha, meaning Yahweh saves. And then 40 Yobel from 1033 CE, which is when that sacrifice was made, we have the fulfillment, the end of the 6,000th year, stepping into year 7,000. That seventh millennia from the fall of Adam, where we will have a 1,000-year period called Sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the timeline. That's how you look at it. I've always wondered why they always, I see all these Christian preachers trying to develop a timeline by going to Daniel. Well, Daniel's talking about two events that become one, which in its fruition becomes the date of the sacrifice. Actually, the date that Yahusha would ride into Jerusalem and he was there for 4 days in the same way you bring a lamb into your home 4 days before Pesach. And that's what he was explaining. He wasn't explaining the second of the return. Why do you think they do that? Are they that confused?
I would have to say they are, seeing as they, constantly claim that the Torah is bondage. I mean, according to what you just shared with us here, this is a declaration of freedom right here. I mean, this is telling us that we're free in the Torah.
Yeah, the Yobel represents freedom, just like Torah. The Torah is the most freeing document in the universe.
Absolutely.
I mean, and the Yobel just explained the timeline. Now, if people want to make up and invent nonsense like the four blood moons, and by the way, wouldn't you find it ridiculous that, a warning and a sign would come after the event actually took place that they list in this nonsense of the four blood moons? I mean, why would you have a warning and a sign after something happened?
The worst warning ever. It would be the worst warning ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And what does any of this have to do with the Yobel?
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah. And what's delineated in the Torah for the timeline? It's a Yobel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
Straight out, in your face. I just read it. You know, I don't understand how it is so many people get caught up in nonsense other than, being in social media, the way I like to share Yahweh's words. I get all kinds of people that will message me. Right. You know, they'll message me. And they will tell me about all kinds of things that they'll usually tell me that Yahusha shared with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I find is that none of them have anything to do with timelines, with verifications, with instructive statements on how to become a covenant stakeholder in the universe or how to meet Yahweh. They're always about minutia. And then the more that they talk to me, the more that they share with me, the more it's in opposition to Yahweh's words. Now, they're claiming that Yahusha's talking to them. One woman told me recently, he's whispering in her ear all the time.
Really?
And then, oh yeah. And then, of course, none of this had anything to do with the covenant, which she was alluding to the fact that, Chawa was out there in the garden and she was naked because she had shared fruit. First of all, Yahweh doesn't say that, and she had shared this fruit with HaSatan. You know, Yahweh, she ate her own fruit and then talked Adam into eating his, and it was off of a tree. And if you want to turn that into some kind of a sexual escapade, and by the way, I find this with religious people, that everything they're always worried about is tied up into sex. In fact, they must not even enjoy sex. I mean, here we got a couple guys. Do you enjoy sex, William? I mean,
yeah, I got three kids.
Yeah, you're kind of a man's man. Yeah, I would think so. Scott, you on board here?
I guess if you don't, you're doing it wrong.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that that's the tool that they use to create a lot of this slavery and bondage we're talking about. You know, they want to use sex as a tool to make people feel guilty or feel inadequate or to feel abnormal. And it would, of course, be natural to become some kind of a monk of some type and go get up into a monastery and sit around and just sort of be a sexless nobody your entire life. And I'm not buying it. You know, but you know, when Yahweh talks about whoring in his words, he's talking about spiritual whores,
right,
for the most part. I mean, these are metaphors.
Yeah,
you know?
But when you share that with the average person, they automatically label you, and it's a shame because they miss out on so much, but they immediately associate that with, you know, a prostitute, you know, out in the streets selling themselves, and they miss the point. They can't see that you're referencing religiosity.
Yeah, well, Yahweh always called going after all these other idols and these foreign gods whoring. You know, spiritual
Absolutely,
whoring.
Yeah.
That's what he says over and over and over. You know, so if that's what we're here to you know, if we're looking at Yahweh's words and we're trying to get what he's getting at,
right,
it's obviously spiritual whoring. Now, I'm not sitting here trying to promote, you know, going out here and you know, trying to date your best friend's wife or things like this. No, he says not to do that. And I mean, I can see why that is. He says not to continually be doing these things because, you know, that's going to lead to all kinds of ill will and tear families apart. And Yahweh's about families, you know. You know, negative things are going to happen if we run around literally whoring around our cities and neighborhoods and countries. But, you know, if we're to look at the United States today, it's pretty much already happened. You're looking in a country that has completely fallen.
Listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Just look at religion as a whole. I mean, turn on your TV sets, people, and watch the news. I hate TV, but when I do, I watch the news, and there's never anything positive about it. You know, you hear about these kids being molested and you know, Catholicism and Islam and on and on. It's, you know, it's horrible. But people are delusional. They'll stick with it.
So much of it does come out of religion. Matter of fact, religious people more likely be those on the internet looking at porn. Welcome back to another segment of Shattering Myths with Scott and William and myself. We were just discussing off the air the way that people were led to believe that no man can know when the return date is. Well, there was a day called the Unknown Day, and there still is, and that's Teruah. Even then, you can know the day. You just can't know the hour or the year that it's going to take place. And this is the day in Yashayah, where Yahweh shared with us that those that he view as covenant members will be taken off the face of the earth as standing grain. Lot, the story of Lot, that's the foreshadowing of the actual fulfillment of the Moed Mikra of Teruah, which we celebrated the first day of this seventh month, just 15 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was the unknown day. It was always called the unknown day. And it's because there's no way to really decipher the minute that happens by looking at Yahweh's words. And he kept it that way, I think, for a reason. You know, we're supposed to be on our toes. We're supposed to be sharing information. We're supposed to be sharing what's important with people. Have you ever noticed that the conversations that we have a tendency to take part in are pretty much meaningless? You know, there's this sterility to the conversation. People are talking all the time, and they're not saying anything that matters.
Hey, it's funny you should mention that. Kifa on FB, he brought that point up the other day, and he was just like, man, it seems like, you know, everybody you talk to these days, I mean, it's a meaningless conversation. It's, I it's just stupidity. Stupidity
well,
at its finest.
There's a million distractions out there, haven't you noticed?
Right.
There's a very wide range of things. You know, I do have some interests, like in one sport in particular, and I know we share this, William, MMA.
Right.
Okay. But, you know, although I may talk about that from time to time with people I know, certainly there is no, it's not the overriding factor in my life. I know Scott played, you played pro football, didn't you, Scott?
Yeah, definitely. I coach it now, but yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
But at the same time, this is not the overriding factor in your life, is it?
No. No, definitely not.
You know, it's more important to me to live. To live.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're on a path, you can take... You can take a right, or you can take 50 different left turns. Now, if the path is clearly delineated to life, and if what Yahweh's words say are true, there's only one path. There's not 100 paths to Yahweh. Most of the people that'll tell you there are, or actually 100% of them, they don't even use Yahweh's name.
Right,
unless it's
right.
In passing, they'll say, whether you call him Allah or whether you call him Lord or whether you call him this or whether you call him Yahweh or whether you call him the Great Spirit or whether you call him, you know, why don't you just call him, you know, Joe Shit the Rag Man? I mean, really. In other words, they have such a disrespect and they are vehemently opposed to his name, which is something that the scribes are vehemently opposed to his name. Even if you get into books like the Hallelujah Scriptures, all they've really managed to do is change a couple of names and titles. I appreciate the fact they take a filthy name like Holy or term like Holy or a name that they ascribe to Yahweh in typical religious books like Lord and got them out of there. But the rest of what they follow is really, the Textus Receptus. And we know that because it has the same mistakes, the same that ends? The same nonsense?
Yeah, what's sad about it, though, is that most people, Larry, they can't seem to realize, I mean, or they don't come to the realization that they're being programmed, literally. I mean, everyone's in a preoccupational state. They're in the pursuit of money, and they think that that money's going to buy them happiness, and it's not. And so, you know, I get we got to work, but it's not all about the money.